Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to Sawbones, a mural tour of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Sydney, I want to say belated happy birthday to you.
Oh, well, thank you, Justin.
It was your 31st birthday, and I'm 33, and I can't help but thinking, like, do you feel...
We are old. Is that what you were going to say?
So
we are getting so old.
Crazy old that we're older than anybody who's ever lived, but that's not what I was going
to... 31 felt old.
31 felt old,
yeah,
huh?
30 didn't feel old.
31 feels
31
old.
31 feels, because it's like, it's anticlimactic.
Yeah, it's like 31.
Now I will continue on into my 30s. And,
yeah, marching. I remember when I was in college, I thought people who were in their 30s were the oldest people on earth. We had one guy in our like group of friends who like secretly hit 30, and it was like a dirty secret. Did you hear he's 30? He turned 30. Like, it really happened. Anyway, Sid, you're 31, I'm 33. I feel like we're running low on time for our great invention.
Did you have anything particular in mind?
No.
Like what we are going to invent?
I don't have any particular areas of expertise or any specific creativity, but like, I feel like we're running low on time for our great, like, I just want to know that after I'm gone, like, something will be named after me. Like, you know.
Oh, like your legacy. Like the thing that.
My legacy. Like, you know, the guy that invented Totino's pizza rolls? Like, they named those Totino's after him. Like,
you think that guy was named Totino?
Yeah, Totino, and they were Totino's Pizza Rolls.
Is that his first name or last name?
Both, Totino, Totino. Are you...
like the founder of West Virginia, Morgan Morgan.
Morgan Morgan, right. do you...
So what do you think it will be?
I don't know.
Justinize something? Or Justinification?
Justinification,
or?
Justinize. I'm having...
Are you really justined that? That sounds negative.
That sounds negative, doesn't it? Yeah.
I don't know. Well, think about it. You know, the doctor we're going to talk about today succeeded in this goal.
Yeah, what did he get?
Yeah, well, have you ever heard of the word mesmerize?
I have. I have heard of mesmerization.
Mesmerization?
Mesmerism?
Perhaps?
Or maybe? Mesmerizing, right.
Yeah.
To mesmerize.
To mesmerize.
That's a dude? Yes.
Yeah. Franz Anton Mesmer.
Mesmer.
Yeah, Franz Anton Mesmer.
What was his deal?
So, Dr. Mesmer was born in Germany in 1734. His father was a master forester. I only mentioned that because I didn't know there were such things as master foresters.
You keep chopping them down and planting new ones. You'll get there someday, young Padawan.
How many trees do you have to chop down, do you think, to become a master forester?
You know, here's the surprising thing. It's 50. It's not hard.
That's not that hard.
It's a very low bar.
Maybe there's quality measures, too, not just quantity. Like, you have to chop down 50 trees, but...
You chop down 50 trees, but if one tree falls on you, you lose your standing for a week.
So is that all it is? If you can survive chopping down 50 trees?
Survive chopping down the trees. Don't stand where, because it's hard to guess. Where are they going to fall? I don't know.
Well, I think that's part of becoming a master forester is right. You know which way they're going to fall.
You got to get your trig out, get your graph paper, and just go for it.
So he did not follow in his father's forestry footsteps.
Right, because he can't track him because his dad's too good at foresting.
I don't even think we know what he doesn't leave, forestry is.
He doesn't leave footsteps.
he studied medicine. Boring.
Yeah, a little more
loser,
conventional.
At the University of
There's
Vienna.
A whole forest out there for you, son. I thought I'd leave this to you. You've let me down today, Franz.
There's so many trees still standing.
I swore when I was your age, I would remove every cursed tree from this great earth.
Every tree in Germany.
Let me down, Franz. Oh, Franz. Okay, so Franz studied medicine.
He studied medicine. He actually, I think this is kind of interesting. His doctoral dissertation was on the influence of planets on the human body.
Hmm. Okay.
This was basically, and we'll see this kind of theme echoed.
So it's made up. It.
Yeah. the idea is that there are tides in the human body, mm-hmm. like a fluids or whatever, and that they're influenced by the movements of planets and the moon, kind of like the tides of the ocean are influenced by the moon. Mm-hmm. And it affects your health and mental well-being and all that.
Hmm.
I think what the weirdest part about this is that this was probably just plagiarized.
Good start, Franz. Good start.
So it's kind of a bizarro theory, and it wasn't even his.
Oh, man. That's not a good start, Franz, but keep going.
I found that mentioned several places, and I found two different things about it. One, it didn't seem like that big a deal, so maybe the guy who really made up the theory was like, well,
it seems dumb in retrospect. He's welcome
to. Let's let it be that Mesmer guy's fault. And two, it was also mentioned several times that it was pretty commonplace to plagiarize your dissertation.
Nobody could read anyway back then. It's practically caveman times.
I thought that was pretty. So there's the justification. So maybe you should, hey, if you're working on your doctoral dissertation, just plagiarize it and then say, I am following in a grand tradition
of stealing.
This is just what you do.
Where was he operating out of?
So at that point, he started practicing medicine in Vienna. He married a very, very rich lady. And, you know, this is always that point, I feel like, in our episodes where he could have just had a really rocking life, right?
Just, yeah, everything was going fine.
He's a super rich doctor. He's living in Vienna. He's got a big fancy house. He's a huge patron of the arts. He's like a buddy of Mozart's. Well, I mean, Mozart was like 12, I think, when they met. So, I mean, I don't know about buddy, but
I actually wonder if there's something to that. Like, if you don't have enough money, then you're basically like focused on paying the rent and keeping food and clothes on your kids' backs. Well, you shouldn't put food on your kids' backs, but you know what I'm saying. Like, and
unless that's a weird game that you make them play.
Yeah.
Like, who can get the food off of your brother's back first?
It's the only thing that distracts us from the hunger most nights. But maybe like once you're like independently wealthy, it leaves the brain free to wander into stupid alleys where it can find dumb ideas.
Well, that's exactly what he did. You know, instead of just enjoying this really rockin' life, he started experimenting with magnets. He had actually in one experiment, he had a patient swallow like a compound that contained iron. And then he would attach magnets to various places on her.
To try to figure out where food goes when you eat it?
No, just to influence her health and well-being with magnets.
People are still doing that, so.
People have always been fascinated with magnets. We haven't done a show on this. We should do a show on this at some point, but magnets are a big thing. When it was over, she felt a lot better. And what was weird about it is that, you know, this is the kind of story that you would think would lead into, and so he came up with the idea that magnets should be used in medicine. No. Instead, he thought, you know what? I don't think it was the magnets. I think it was me. I know it seems like it would be the magnets.
What do you mean?
This is how he came up with his theory of animal magnetism. This is really what it's called.
It was something raw between me and Victoria. Something visceral that I think healed her was my personal sexual charisma.
You're not that far off.
Okay.
It's really the idea. Okay, so wellness, you know, health is the free flow of energy throughout the body. That's what he believed. That there are these channels throughout the body, and if this fluid, magnetic fluid. I mean, the fluid does have a magnetic property. If it can flow freely, then you're healthy. But when one of those channels gets blocked, you get sick. So when you are sick, the only way to fix that is to transfer energy from another person into you, or it could even be from an inanimate object, as long as it was imbued with the magnetic energy of a person who was a really great conductor.
Okay. I got it. So he thought, I'm a great conductor of magnetism energy, of healing energy.
Right. So you don't need the magnets. You just need Mesmer.
I wish more doctors did this. Like, I don't know. I gave her aspirin and her headache went away, But I think there was something there, though.
I don't think it was the aspirin. I think it was me.
I'm going to call her. Phones haven't been invented yet, but I'm going to give her a telegram or something.
Now, remember, it's not just a sexual, personal connection kind of energy. It was this kind of, you could think of it in a very platonic way. It's an energy that all of us need, and some of us are just better carriers of, and mm-hmm. so we can pass it on. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily a sexual attraction.
Okay.
So once you overcome these blockages with the help of this, magnetic energy, it'll restore balance to your system. And the energy itself, like I said, it's this magnetic fluid that's in your body, and he believed that it was made of air and fire and spirit.
Okay, so he was still workshopping that bit of it.
Yeah, aren't those what Captain Planet is made up, or right. at least part of?
It's most of the Captain Planet team.
And heart is in there. I don't know.
Wind, I think.
Wind?
Water.
Isn't that air? I don't know.
Air, fire, wind.
Earth.
Earth, wind, and fire.
Earth, wind, and fire.
The Temptations. Chicago. And more this summer at Soulfest, coming out to the River Bend. We've got all the greats.
You want to talk about some animal magnetism.
Yeah, right.
Thank you.
Wait till Lionel Richie gets up on the mic. Okay, sorry.
In Vienna, he didn't get a lot of footing with this theory. No. He started trying to practice it. He was on faculty at the medical school there, and that was not... people were not down with this.
Yeah.
And actually, what did him in Vienna, as far as, his respectability... was where he kind of succeeded. I think this is really weird. What I read initially is that he tried to restore the sight of a blind musician. He couldn't do it, and he was kind of, publicly shamed afterwards. Mm-hmm. What it really was is that he tried to restore the sight of Maria Theresa von Paradis, who was actually, she was a blind pianist, and Mozart actually wrote a piece for her. Hmm. So kind of a big deal.
Okay.
She had been struck blind suddenly at the age of 3. He attempted to restore her sight, and from the accounts that I read from her family, he did partially succeed.
Okay.
Now, I don't know that this proves any of his animal magnetism theories.
No.
But somehow, the fact that she could sort of see actually made her unhappier than before. It made her life worse. She didn't rely on her finger memory to play piano anymore. She started looking, mm-hmm. and it caused her to make mistakes because obviously her eyesight was still very poor.
Right.
She still probably by today's standards would have been considered legally blind.
Huh.
But it started making her life worse, and she wrote that she was happier before this ever happened to her. And basically the family kind of blamed him for even more problems than she'd already encountered in her life, and he was shamed and kicked off faculty and had to move.
Wild. Okay.
Kind of a weird story.
Yeah, that is a weird story. And then he set out to ruin blind people across the world.
by partially restoring their sight.
That's his origin story.
At that point, he moved to Paris.
Okay.
And there he was met with some mixed reviews. People had kind of heard of him, and they were like, oh, no, that's that weird guy, the one who, hangs out with Mozart, but nobody likes him. But then he recruited one follower, Dr. Charles d'Eslon, who was actually really well respected in Paris.
It takes is one. You convince one normal person to believe in you.
Well, and that's pretty much what happened. This one regular doctor who everybody liked said, I actually think there's something here, and boom. There you go. At that point, he really started developing his treatments. So I want to tell you about the treatments that he used to, practice his animal magnetism theory.
I'm ready.
Okay. So first of all, you could just go to Mesmer or d'Eslon, once he was trained appropriately, to have one-on-one therapy.
Okay.
So one-on-one therapy is when you go and you go, I don't know, I don't feel good. Whatever you don't feel good, whatever that means. You're sad, or your stomach hurts, or you broke your foot, or whatever.
All of the above.
Again, this would be a cure-all. So you go to Mesmer, and he sits across from you, and he might touch your hands for a while.
Well, that's nice.
Or maybe just put his hand right below your diaphragm, like in the area of your stomach, right below your diaphragm.
Okay, hey there, hotshot. Let's slow it down a little bit. How about some dinner? What do you think?
And then just hold it there.
Okay.
And then he would probably wave his hands kind of around your body, like around your head and over your sides.
This would be the moment that I'd start to suspect my $20 had been wasted.
And this could go on for hours.
Mm. Wow. Just this keeps getting better and better.
Now, if this is too weird for you.
It is.
Maybe you want to bring a buddy. You know, bring a friend along.
Okay.
And go in like a group. You know, this seems like the kind of thing where if you're not familiar with it, maybe you want to go as like a group of people.
Okay. That makes sense.
So in group therapy. And again, this is probably a bunch of like rich people in Paris. You'd all go in together and you would sit around a baquet.
What's a baquet?
Well, it's like French for tub.
All right.
But a baquet was like this big wooden tub with a lid on it. And it was filled with water and iron filings and broken glass.
Okay.
But there's a lid on it, so you didn't see that.
Okay.
But he would tell you that. I mean, it was like a secret, but that was in there. There were like holes in the top of the lid, and you would have like the number of holes dictate how many patients you could treat at one time. So each one would sit at one of the holes, and there was like a glass bottle with a metal rod sticking out of it that would extend out of the hole.
Okay.
Okay. So you kind of get the idea?
Yeah. You had me grab a picture before we got started. So I'm looking at what I assume is a baquet now.
That is a baquet.
Okay.
Okay. You go, and you can look this up.
It kind of looks like a Mr. Bucket, the crazy water, like the octopus water toy that you'd hook a hose into and it sprays
it does, and water like the everywhere. The little metal thing sticking out of it would start squirting around in the air and spraying right. water all over the place.
Yeah.
It did not do that.
It looks like if a spider got super fat and its legs could no longer reach the ground. It does look like with a roulette wheel on top.
A big fat spider.
Like a big fat spider.
There were also some ropes hanging off of the device that were mainly like to attach you to the device and to attach.
In case things just got like so cray.
And to attach each other, you to each other. So you'd kind of all like either hold hands or tie yourselves together in a big circle. And then you would like set the metal rod like on your body somewhere.
Okay.
Like you could hold it or it could like rest on your shoulder or your stomach, probably wherever you were having a problem.
Okay.
So once everybody was in place, Mesmer would take over. And this is why, I think this more than anything is why mesmerize means all the things it does now. Mm-hmm. So you got to understand, he would do these treatments in his home. So you'd come with all your rich friends, all your fancy rich friends, to his very fancy, you know, Parisian home. And it was, I mean, just the, you know, decadence and opulence, just gorgeously outfitted. And you would be led through these beautiful rooms to the room where you would, you know, sit around the baquet. It was all dimly lit. There would be this like slow, beautiful, trance-like music playing. And he was, you know, elaborately dressed.
Okay, so wait a minute. I hate to stop you. You are basically describing the plot of Rocky Horror Picture Show. That is basically what is happening here. Mesmer is basically Dr. Frankenfurter, and he is basically exactly Rocky Horror Picture Show is what you're describing to me right now.
That's pretty much it.
Basically a bunch of rich people doing the time warp.
That's all it is.
Thinking of those moments when.
And that was a big part of it is that these people would come in and
the time warp.
Then they would do the time warp. And then I always figured it must, when I read about this, it must break out into one of those like Eyes Wide Shut orgy scenes.
Oh, no question. Right? This is all orgy pretense. Like that's obvious. Totes obs. Very nice try, old timey people. But we here in 2014 are on to you. This is total orgy pretense.
We know what you're doing. We know what you're doing.
We know your game.
So you picture all of these gorgeously dressed women in their big wigs, and everybody's like sitting around this thing, and they're listening to this music, and it's dark, and it's, you know, everybody's like, oh my gosh, the luxury, and they're holding these things, and they're waiting for something amazing to happen, and then Mesmer starts wandering around the room. Talking, because there could be three of these going at the same time in the room, talking in this quiet voice, encouraging everyone to whisper. Don't talk out loud. Whisper if you must. And basically working them into kind of a trance. Okay. And he would carry a wand and touch them with his wand periodically. And then he would wave his hands around them and wave his hands around the bouquet as a way of kind of controlling the fluids inside. He would say, I'm controlling the fluids.
What are they supposed to be getting out of the bouquet? Like, what is it? Is there heat coming from the pipes or is there water or nothing?
No,
right?
There's nothing about it that's... No, it's not doing anything.
It just looks like a big stupid ice cream maker.
Yes.
With metal rods coming off.
No, because again, it was coming from Mesmer. These were conducting fluids. Like, yeah, they've got iron and they've got water. And we're kind of vaguely like mimicking something that sounds like science. Like there's an electricity thing. But really, I mean, the idea is that it's coming from Mesmer, is that he is able to steer the fluids in the container, which are helping to steer the fluids in you. And what he's working you towards, and what many people would have during these sessions, is a crisis.
Good.
So if when the treatments finally worked on you, and again, a lot of people in the room would have this crisis during these treatments, this could manifest in a variety of ways. You might throw up. You might start coughing. You might start spitting things. You may enter like a hypnotic trance-like state and just become very calm and still. Or you may become insane for a minute.
Just a bit. That's just very briefly. Common. It will pass.
Whatever happened, it was only temporary. And in that moment, when you entered crisis, the belief, his belief, is that you could look through your own body and see the source of your own illness and correct it. So find that blockage and fix it.
Okay.
And in these group therapies, he took it a step further and said that in that moment, you could also see inside the people around you in order to help them understand their illness and fix it.
If you did it exactly right, you'd see the Matrix. What I'm telling you is when you're ready, you won't have to dodge.
This is also how you see things in like those 3D pictures, you know, with the squiggly lines.
Right, where you have to slightly cross your eyes, yeah.
A lot of people would leave convinced that whatever was wrong with them was better, at least for the time being.
Yeah, like after that, it's either that or tell people what happened. I think you just want to go with, oh yeah, it's way better. Mm.
It was also a very like trendy thing. It was very like the well-to-do enjoyed it, and a lot of women would go back just for like a diversion. Like it was a fun thing to do.
Was that being mesmerized? Like, was that what the...
That is today, yes. That is where that would have come from. Now, I mean, at the time, they weren't saying like, oh, you were mesmerized. But yes, that is what we're referencing.
My problem with this, hard to franchise.
No, you need Mesmer.
You have to have Mesmer there. Good for him, bad for, you know, the Mesmer Incorporated.
Which is probably why it didn't catch on that hugely, is that he had a protege, Charles Deslon, but you don't read about his treatments being like this.
Oh, and Deslon eyes is like, doesn't exactly trip off the tongue.
No. During this time period, as he was gaining some, you know, popularity, he did write a book. So there is a book where you can read about all this if you're interested, and where he outlines animal magnetism and practices. He did win some favor. Marie Antoinette was a huge fan.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some societies of harmony, they were called, that were springing up around France. And they were basically groups of followers of Mesmer who would have somebody kind of be the leader in the group who would learn the techniques. And then they would have like little meetings, different places around France and probably other places in Europe, to be fair. It eventually spread somewhat to England and to the U.S. And you could pay and become a member of these little weird...
So he did do some franchising. He knew he had to get it out there a little
bit. Yeah.
Yeah,
there was some limited, you know, interest in it. But there was a lot of controversy. This was not something that was widely accepted. There were people who thought it was good, and then there were plenty of people who criticized it. There was actually a play written about it. So if you're ever interested, Elizabeth Inchbald wrote Animal Magnetism, which was a farce of the practice and a huge send-up of it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I
bet that'd be a total gut buster today.
I was thinking we should do it with our children's theater.
We'll reenact it, yeah.
Don't you think? I can't think of anything better than a bunch of 12 and 13-year-old girls acting this out.
I'd pay to see that.
So this sounds like, you know, this is the kind of thing that could have just kept going. You know, it had a modest following and rich people liked it. And he was a, you know, an attractive, cool guy. But Louis XVI stepped in and said, you know, I think I'm not a big fan of this. For whatever reason, it upset him. It made him mad. And he said, I want an independent commission to investigate this and find out if there's any truth to any of this. Not so much, he was not, and this is very important, he was not seeking to prove that Mesmer was a quack, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He just wanted to find out if this whole idea of like animal magnetism and this magnetic fluid that may or may not be in the body, if any of this was true.
So he got together a crew.
Yes, so he got together a crew, actually, that included Benjamin Franklin.
He was in town, if he went up.
And it actually, the commission met at Franklin's house. Because he was older and sick at the time, and it was just easier for him. Mm-hmm. Mesmer, in a very clever move, did not go himself. He sent Deslon and said, hey, why don't you go, you know, answer all these questions because you're such a good, you know, you understand this as well as I do. Good buddy.
Old pal.
Hey, don't you want to meet Ben Franklin?
Imagine it.
He invented bifocals.
He'll tell you the kite story, I bet.
Go check it out. So Deslon went and he walked them all, this commission, through the theories and explained everything to them, showed them the bouquet and all of the different things they did. And then they put him through some tests. And one of the tests that I thought was a great example of what this was. So they asked him to magnetize something. He said, okay, so you were a follower of Mesmer. You have this ability to transfer energy through yourself. So magnetize a tree.
All right. Now, see, even I know that this is going to be problematic.
Find any tree on the grounds. Go magnetize it with your hand waving. And then we're going to blindfold this 12-year-old boy that we've got hanging around.
Sure. Okay.
And we're going to have him go find the tree by feeling the magnetic forces that you have, you know, imbued the tree with.
Okay.
Okay.
How'd that work?
So he magnetized a tree, they blindfolded the kid, and he wandered around the yard, and he continued to wander further and further away from the appropriate tree, saying, I think I'm getting closer, I think I'm getting closer, I'm feeling the magnetic force, and then he passed out. So,
not a great showing for animal magnetism.
No, so it didn't work. That was not, I would say, not a successful test.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, I don't know all of the other magnetic kid Olympics that they
tried. Whatever tests of skill that they had.
I don't know if this was just like a school field day that happened to overlap, and they were like, we'll just kill two birds with one stone here.
And almost kill one kid.
I have no reason to think that the kid wasn't okay. If anybody's worried, by all accounts, the kid was fine. He just passed out from wandering the yard aimlessly, blindfolded, looking for a magnetic tree.
So I'm assuming that was pretty much the end of mesmerism.
That pretty much was. At that point, they wrote up a report and basically said, if there are any effects, it's imagination. Okay. And that put an end to Mesmer practicing a lot in Paris. He actually, after this, left France, which was probably good for him because this is right before everybody started getting guillotined.
Ah, okay.
Right before the Reign of Terror. So it was probably a good thing that they did him a big favor. He was exiled, though, after that. He still lived out the rest of his life rich, I should say.
Oh, thank God.
Now, what exactly he did, I don't know. He was still a patron of the arts. He still loved music. But I don't think he did much in the way of medicine after this.
Okay.
Now, the great thing about people like this is that no matter how bizarre their theories and practices, there's always going to be somebody to pick up that ball and keep running with it.
Right.
So the legacy he leaves behind, other than obviously the word mesmerize, which, you know, we all know now where that comes from, is that there were people still practicing this throughout different parts of Europe and then again in the U.S., until the 1920s.
Wow.
So we're talking about the late 1700s to the 1920s.
Yeah, like 150 years, something like
that. Yeah. That these, long after he died, people were still practicing mesmerism. If you remember from our phrenology episode, we talked about the Fowler brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They got into mesmerism as well.
Oh, good.
That was part of their business. Where you would, I mean, and this is essentially the same kind of thing. You would sit down with a practitioner and they'd wave their hands around you and put you in sort of some kind of trance-like state, and then you were fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And what's even more interesting is that because this is, as you may have gathered, kind of closely related to hypnosis,
mm-hmm.
some would call Franz Mesmer the father of hypnosis.
Oh, huh.
So although the two theories are hardly identical.
Hypnosis being sort of real-ish.
Yeah, yeah. Us actually having some like evidence that there is something there with hypnosis and there are certain ways to practice it. And, you know, there are certainly very many people who are trying to do studies on hypnosis now.
Mm-hmm.
Mesmerism kind of led people in that direction. And those ideas inspired what was later known as hypnosis.
Hmm.
One other thing I thought was really interesting, I read this on a psychology website about kind of the history of psychotherapy,
mm-hmm.
is that this was also known as the first secular psychotherapy.
Huh.
Up until that time, any kind of therapy was very much based on the teachings of the church and was told from a religious perspective. And while there certainly was some kind of spiritualism, you may say, to this therapy, it was not based on any kind of traditional, you know, Judeo-Christian or any other kind of religious background, which opened the doors to the I think I saw it phrased, the great unchurched to enter therapy, which was a good thing.
So good news. Nobody got hurt too bad, save for a few well-off folks and a poor, disgruntled, blindfolded 12-year-old. And maybe a blind pianist,
maybe,
perhaps. The jury's still out.
I don't know. That was pretty interesting. And obviously today this isn't practice.
Yeah.
Hypnotism is, but mesmerism is not.
Well, thank you so much for listening to our episode here about our new friend and personal idol, Franz Mesmer.
He's a pretty cool dude.
He seems like a cool guy. I kind of dig it.
So maybe that's the end of the moral of this story, Justin, is that you don't actually have to invent anything that's useful.
Just name something just after
me. Make something up.
Run with it, huh?
Be really cool about it, and then we'll name it after you.
Thank you to everybody who donated to our program in the Max Fun Drive. We had a record-setting year, and it was just so fantastic to have everybody.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
Thank you to folks tweeting about the show, like Felicia, Venetia, Brianne, Joe, Dennis, Donald, Hallie, Evan, G, Mackenzie, Daniel, Travis, Jonathan, Ennis Asher, Mike, so many others. Corey Doctorow, thank you so much for tweeting about our program. It's awesome you listen. And so many others. That is the best way we have of spreading the word. We don't advertise or anything. So if you could tell somebody about the show, send them a link to our iTunes page or just sawboneshow.com. That is all great by us. And while you're at our iTunes page, if you leave us a review and subscribe there, that is also massively, massively helpful.
Yes, thank you. I read all of those, and I really appreciate you taking the time to tell us what you think.
Thanks to the taxpayers for letting us use their song Medicines at the beginning and ending of our program. They're the taxpayers on Twitter, so you can go follow them if you want to do that and buy all their music. And be sure to head over to MaximumFun.org. That's our network, and there's a lot of other great shows you can enjoy there, like Judge John Hodgman, The Goose Down, Jordan Jesse Go, Bullseye,
My brother and me.
Thank you so much, sweetheart. And many, many more. Go on over there and head over to the forums. You can talk about this episode and all the other programming we have. That's going to do it for us this week. And be sure to join us again next week for another episode of Sawbones. Until then, I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
As always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.